We'll start with the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll move.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion on the minutes? Everybody's good? Okay. All in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Any against? Motion carried, so the minutes are approved. So next on the agenda is the vouchers.
Well, you have two resolutions.
Okay.
And the we submitted our capital program to the county to be included in the budget process, and at that time they realized that these two projects, they wanted to move up and get them in faster than waiting to next year. Maybe we could have the design done over the winter, get ready to do them next spring and summer. So upon their recommendation, we moved the establishing capital project for the water storage tank, because that tank is needed if we ever tie into the city water supply, and the window replacement for Hardenberg. It's we're putting the Viper Center in Hardenberg. It'd be a shame to do the renovations and not have the window package correct. So they suggested we move them, and it requires amending the capital program. And we put it through our board, and now they're here.
Okay. So, resolution 439 is about the water storage tank replacement. Do I have a motion to motion?
I'll move.
Second.
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any against? Okay. Motion carried. And resolution 444, the window replacement project.
441.
Okay. You second?
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any against? No? Okay. Motion carried.
I think just for a little history, the county planning people came to the campus this year, worked through our capital projects with us, so they support these, and realized that they were needed, and not to let them delay another year.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I'm going to do a little budget, and then Chris has some other stuff for you.
Okay.
You're always a day ahead of our board meeting, so it's hard for us to give you stuff that we haven't given to the board. But this is what we gave the board last month. And it's very good information, so we wanted to give it to you. Maybe you could pass it over there. So I guess the real emphasis on this is that the projected variance from the beginning of 15-16 to the end, because we end our year on August 31st, is that in this report we'd be adding about $150,000 to the fund balance. And what you should know is at 8/31/14, the fund balance was $256. At 8/31/15, it was $558. And now after we add this, it will go up to over $7 million. And it had been in our strategic plan to increase the fund balance by, I think it was 2017, to somewhere around $700,000. The state also has a recommendation that we should have 5% in fund balance, and we were well below that. So this is last month's report, and when we go to the board tomorrow, we'll be improving on that number. That's great. All I can release until the board sees it.
Thank you.
So that's the information for you.
We're ahead of schedule,
but the next one for tomorrow's board report is even better.
And I'm speaking on behalf of the president. He couldn't make it tonight. He wanted me to pass on some information. First, we have some updated informational packets, just some key information to pass out to a member of this committee. So, come on. Second, there's also a newsletter of events that has been going on and will be going on in the future. This is just for your information. And then lastly, he just wanted me to convey to everybody here that he is still working on arranging a meeting where he could have a comprehensive update of what's been going on with the college to the entire legislature. So that's something that we're planning for the fall semester.
Mayor, if I could just follow up on that?
Sure.
You know, I've been in touch with the president's office and Jen Bell, and we're trying to come to what would be a good date for the legislature when we already have a meeting instead of doing something standalone that everyone's got to drive to. We're looking at a couple of dates, possibly doing it as a privilege of the floor kind of thing at our November meeting. The other option is we have a public hearing in Accord at the town of Rochester Town Hall, and it wouldn't be terrible to drive. It's like 7 and 10 minutes up the road, up 209. So that those are the two things that we've been trying to work on and having a date. I could be wrong about that. Wednesday? The Tuesday. Then it's got to be the 16th then. Public hearing on the budget. Yep. So the 16th would be the other day. Yeah. I think that the 15th was going to be difficult because the same night as the trustees meeting is that. And that was going to be difficult to try and get both in one night. And in my conversation with Jen, but the 16th is the one in Accord. I was trying to think of the best
thing.
Wednesday. Yeah, it's the budget public hearing in Accord. So.
Yeah, that way maybe you get enough people to go out.
That's what I. You know.
Well, that's the idea.
Yep.
Is there anything else? Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Sorry, I was late here. You can be here. I have some.
Lee, do you want to share with us?
We're in the still in the middle of harvest season. I don't know if anybody's had an opportunity to go out to any of the pick-your-owns or whatever, but agritourism is huge in Ulster County, bigger than I thought. I know that it's big, but they've had really great weather. I love it's awful dry. Lots and lots of people taking advantage of local products, local produce, and whatever, so that's a wonderful thing. We're in the midst of working with the Local Economies Project. We are finishing up our current three-year grant with them. We had a two-year grant and a three-year grant. We're looking at another three-year grant for the ag program that we don't that's outside. We have an Eastern New York horticulture program that we participate in that's regional to all the counties from Clinton County down to Westchester. That's mostly fruit and vegetables. The rest of the agriculture in Ulster, because we can really pretty much grow anything here in Ulster, well, maybe not tropical fruit, but we're very diverse with agriculture, which is really good. So we use the LEP program to help provide the educational expertise we need for growers who are working with livestock and small grains. There's a really burgeoning industry in Ulster County for hard cider and the grains that folks use to make bourbon and spirits and whatever. Again, it's 10 years ago there was none. Currently there are at least 10 or 12 and more probably in the mix. It takes a long time for folks to be able to get the permits and stuff that they need to be able to do that. But they've been really pretty successful and the stuff that we grow here is pretty renowned. It's interesting because that is what Ulster County back in the 1700s, that's what Ulster County grew. And then as things changed and climate changed and whatever, it was easier to grow those things in other places. So it's interesting to see it coming back to that and people taking advantage of the local things. We just started we got a $400,000 grant from the Office of Children and Family Services from New York State to work, enhance our Relatives as Parents program. This is kinship care. So for the next 4 years, we'll be looking to expand that program, hopefully with the site in Ellenville, and some additional work that we'll be doing as far as providing education and support services for folks that find themselves raising their relatives' children, which is kind of an undersung thing. Not a whole lot of people realize how, I think, how big it is across the country and certainly in Ulster County. So this program we've been working with for the past 5 or 6 years, so we're really happy that we're going to be able to expand the efforts that we've got with that. We're in the middle of budget season. I submitted the budget to those of you around the table, hopefully you've all seen it, as well as to the county exec's office. I understand from the legislature that we're in for the $350,000 that we asked for, which is great, and we will use that, as we have in the past, to play off our other grants and contracts and whatever and bring more education and services to the folks of Ulster County. Our total budget probably for 2017 is going to be close to $5 million, so you can see that we take the investment from the county and then use that to bring other dollars in. As a matter of fact, one of the grants that we have with New York City DEP coming run through us is money for an Ulster County planner. So that's about $350,000 that goes directly to the county to hire staff that's working in the watershed, which is really good considering I just saw an email that said that the water release is way down and they don't want people fishing for trout and whatever. That's back to the drought that we're experiencing. It doesn't affect our agriculture as much as some other places because most of our agriculture is close to water sources, you know, rivers and streams and whatever, and they do use irrigation from that. But farmers are very, very much aware of the fact that water is a precious resource, and so they have been really very careful about how much water they have been using for the crops. So far in Ulster, we've made out pretty well, but you know, going into the winter, if we don't get a pretty big snow load, spring is going to be. Kingston is already talking about water conservation issues. I think there'll be other towns as well that are going to be looking at that.
They are very low. Cooper's Lake is low. There's a reservoir the weekend. It's been a long time since I've seen it that low.
I saw a graphic on the local weather website, Hudson Valley Weather, that showed the Chokan Reservoir was somewhere around 64% of capacity.
Yeah, it is pretty low. So we're about 20 inches short of rainfall. At this particular point on what we normally have. So just certainly something to keep in mind and hopefully make folks aware of it. I this is a really green county, and I think as you drive around, people don't recognize the fact that the plants are under stress. You're not going to see as many colors this year, I think, because trees are just going to drop. They're conserving their energy, and they're just going to drop leaves without turning color. So... but certainly something to keep letting residents know is that that's a really important thing. Again, we're not as bad off as the rest of New York State, which has been in a state of drought for at least 3 or 4 months. So we're just sort of experiencing now, but something to be very much aware of.
Thank you. Okay, so since we have people from the attorney's office here, so you can join the table if you'd like.
Sure. I'll move over to you three. Sit side by side.
Well, you can
sit. Oh, you?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have Resolution 424 setting a public hearing on proposed local law prohibiting cyberbullying in Ulster County.
I have to ask Vicki. Vicki wraps resolutions, so... I think it was here because it's got to do somewhat with children education.
Typically,
it's going to be in laws and rules also as well tonight.
So you have the floor. You can introduce yourselves and however you'd like to proceed.
My name is Bob Fisher. I'm an attorney. I work for the Ulster County Attorney's Office. I'm one of the assistants, along with Kristen Gamir. And this is Dr. Robert Beyer. Kristen and I are the juvenile prosecutors for the county. We handle all the cases in Ulster County where a person under 16 years of age has been charged with committing what would be, if they were above 16 years of age, a crime. And it runs the whole gamut. We've been doing this for I've been doing this for a long time. Kristen has as well. We handle everything from shootings, gun violence, burglary, robbery, armed robbery, rape, unfortunately, far, far, far too many sex offenses these days. It seems to dominate our lives and our court time. We were at a gathering of all the assistant county attorneys and county attorneys in the state, all the juvenile prosecutors in the state last November in Albany. And when we were there, the issue had come up of cyberbullying, and Albany had at one time passed an anti-cyberbullying law, which was subsequently struck down by the Court of Appeals. Albany rewrote the law based upon a decision by Judge Graffio, who was one of the judges for the Court of Appeals. And so we took this in, and we came back with it. And when we came back, for a long time, we had had interaction with parents and law enforcement people who were communicating with us that there were children who were the victims of cyberbullying. And what we experienced was that our hands were tied, that unless it fit into certain niches, there really wasn't much we could do about it. And some of the conduct would surprise you to know that there was no recourse. What necessarily constitutes obscenity and what can be posted in terms of pictures of people's bodies and whether or not that amounted to something that was chargeable was quite disturbing to us, to find out that you could take a picture of a young woman, for instance, with no top on, disseminate that broadly, and that there was nothing that could be done about it. So we were dealing with parents and law enforcement people who are coming to us and saying, look, we're having a problem with this. We'd like you to do something about it, and we couldn't. At the same time, both Kristen and I noticed that one of the other types of cases we handle are what are called PINs, persons in need of supervision, and a fair amount of the PINs cases that we handle are kids that don't go to school. The school brings the PINs case. And what we noticed was a lot of the school attendance issues seemed to stem from this type of behavior. And we would get to court and we'd say, well, we've got a kid that missed 65 days of school. What are we going to do with them? Or, of course, we're always trying to get to the root of it and find out what's going on. And when we do, we were finding that a lot of these kids weren't going because of this type of cyberbullying that was going on. So we brought this back. We brought it to Mr. Cornell. We brought it to Ms. Hebranek. She took it to Mr. Cornell. And it's something that the county wanted to address. And Kristen originally put together a piece of legislation. She was able to work on it with Mr. Rock and Ms. Guerin, and really a comprehensive
collaborative.
There, that's the word I was looking for. A collaborative piece of legislation is what we have and what we're putting in the field. It occurred to me at one point as we were doing this that it would be important. I thought if I were a legislator and I were trying to decide what to do with something like this, I'd want to hear from someone that dealt with the mental health aspect, somebody who was seeing kids who were troubled by this, someone who worked in the school system. And so we reached out to Dr. Robert Beyer, who I'll let him tell you his own credentials, but Dr. Beyer, to get a psychologist, a clinician, a PhD psychologist, to get their feel for kids who are experiencing these problems and whether or not this type of legislation would be beneficial. So that's essentially our speech. I guess if you have any questions, we do have some things we'd like to hand out. We have
Dr. Beyer's report.
Dr. Beyer's report.
And then
Mr. Donaldson.
We have a draft of frequently asked questions, but they're not finalized, and we actually wanted to see if we got any more questions. We did. I didn't hand out the FAQs, but if people want them, I don't know if you want them or not. It's basically, I don't know if you want to hand them out.
I guess, you know, just coming from me and from what I've heard from, you know, a number of legislators is, you know, there's a big concern, and one of the biggest concerns that we've had the entire time since this was introduced is the idea of locking up juveniles who have committed these crimes. And I just, you know, can you go into, I know that you folks and Erica, you work with Holly and Erica and others to try and nail down exactly, you know, which violations would result in what? Could you just give a little overview
of
that?
Absolutely. And one of the things I want to tell you is I did speak with Mr. Cornwright today, and he couldn't be here tonight, but he was also, and I neglected to tell you that, Mr. Cornwright was part of this process. He worked on the law with us. He was really instrumental as well in putting this together. First off, let me say this. It is a legal impossibility for a person who is defined as a child under New York law to go to jail. That cannot happen. If you are under 16 years old, you cannot go to jail. It's not something that's available. Persons over 15, 16 and 17 and up are under New York law are defined as adults. The way that this law and this really, I think Holly deserves the credit for this. The way that this law that we proposed to you was constructed, if you are 16 or 17 and you're charged with this cyberbullying, your first outcome in terms of a criminal outcome would be probation. It is not an offense that you could be incarcerated for in and of itself. Now, you could violate your probation. You could do lots of things when you're on probation that could ultimately lead you to jail. But as far as the cyberbullying offense itself, probation would be the most restrictive outcome. And it's important to understand, and I don't know that you folks, this is something that would have been presented to you or that you'd be readily aware of. I wouldn't if I didn't do the work I do. But in dealing with children, again, people under 16, any decision that the court makes has to be the least restrictive alternative available. As I say, I've been doing juvenile delinquency work for a long time. It is the fewest of few cases where a child is placed outside the home. And in fact, that has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. I can't tell you. I don't think there have probably been three or four kids placed from Ulster County, maybe this year, placed outside the home.
Meaning in a secure facility?
In a secure facility, yeah. So those are the rarest of rare cases. And certainly the way that, if you look at it, the way this law is constructed, our intention with the juveniles, the 15 and below, is to put them through a diversion program to try to educate the offender so that they don't recommit. But jail was not a viable outcome.
What if somebody is charged?
Fine if I said, I'm used to every time, if I don't stand up in court, they smack me in the head. So it's like, it's a reflex. It's a bad lawyer reflex.
Now this change if somebody's charged as an adult.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Somebody's charged as an adult.
If someone's charged as an adult, they would, again, have to be 16 and up. The person who's charged as an adult under the way that this statute is written, if they're convicted of the offense, the first time they're convicted of the offense, the ultimate, the most serious punishment they could have would be a probation supervision.
I'm just interested in knowing about how bullies are addressed in terms of their own family circumstances, which are
not positive. I'm wondering, well, there's a, for example, the history of abuse in the family. If that's part of how they're... Yeah. Well, I can tell you that, and then you might be able to speak to this as far as what happens in the school. But as far as someone, if given an appearance ticket for committing an act of cyberbullying, if it's what you agree with. They don't go right to court. They go to the probation department for an intake. And the first thing they need to do is see if the child is eligible for diversion services. The reason I'm saying that, they talk to the child, they talk to the parents or whoever their guardian is, and they look into their home. And especially if they get diversion services, there is a comprehensive look into the child and his or her life to see what else is going on. And a lot of times kids will get to the probation department on a juvenile delinquency appearance ticket only to find out that they need coordinated children's services or possibly a CPS call, because as soon as someone, that kid is brought to the county's attention and they start looking into their life, they find out there's actually a lot of other things going on. I don't know if the schools do more comprehensive work into there.
When it first appears at school, and certainly the vast majority of this stuff is going to first appear at school, although it can first appear to a parent at home who has a child who brings them their computer, their iPad, their phone, and go look what's being written. So schools see it kind of quickly. When we go through our investigation, our dealing with the kids, when your kind of question comes up, and it does, we might be the one who called VSS in at the same time we're doing our own investigation on it, because it's a family we didn't know. You know what I mean? So it's the first find of abuse or the dysfunction within the family. So schools already access that as part of what's already available to them.
I'm also just, sorry, I'll let you go. I'm also just interested in general, in the culture of bullying, and whether it's cyberbullying or bullying, whether this, if the remedies that are being considered are integrated with bullying policies.
From the school's point of view, when I got asked to take a look and to be part of this and try to help, schools already do what might look like a full embrace of any kind of kid question that comes in. Most schools have resources of the regular kind, so they've got social workers and psychologists and guidance counselors and such, all of whom are already set up to try to handle a kid crisis. And in some senses, this is a regular kid crisis. It's just that this is one particular area where things can get pretty far out of hand. Mm-hmm. So this is it's really much more than just, I don't know, you told me I have a bad nose and made me feel bad. This is unfortunately a few kids who become much more committed to victimizing children in some fashion or form. And cyberbullying is just a brand new form of it, obviously. Mm-hmm. In the old days, I could get put in a locker and that was one type, or I'd steal my lunch money. This is a whole new nature and a whole new forum for kids to play in. So schools have that stuff, and they certainly take all this very seriously. And there's a sense in which they're kind of good at it. They know the kids, and they spend a lot of time with them.
And then the penalties, the same. So, for example, let's say that someone really my child in school and is 16 or older,
the
penalties are the same?
Or are they different? No, the penalties are different for a 16-year-old than they are for a 15 or 14-year-old.
No, I didn't mean that.
Did you say if it occurs in school or if it occurs at the home?
It would be the same.
No, I'm saying actually if bullying occurs, whether it's cyber or not, the penalties are the same.
Oh, this is a cyberbullying law.
I understand. I'm just asking, have the rules regarding harm to a child.
Do we already have something in place?
Is there a difference between the two types of bullying?
Or do we have a law for it?
So we don't have there's no law that the New York State Legislature has created yet called an anti-bully law. The what we do have is we have assault laws, we have
harassment laws.
Therein lies
but
the problem.
But they inflict as much
harm. Therein lies the problem. So harassment, I think it's 240, 36 of the penal law. I think it's 240. Harassment, as it's defined now, we have assault. Assault is I punch you in the nose and I give you a bloody nose or a black eye. Harassment is more a course of conduct where you're bothering somebody repeatedly, you're pushing them, you're shoving them, well, the typical bully stuff, knocking the books out of their hand, elbowing them, whatever a bully might do. That charge cannot be brought against the juvenile because under New York law, it's not a misdemeanor, it's what's called a violation. And you cannot charge a juvenile with a violation. For instance, and we don't want any of the kids in Ulster County to ever know this, so please oath that it doesn't leave this room. But if the kid possesses a marijuana cigarette, we can't charge them. We charge you, you're an adult, that's unlawful possession of marijuana, it's a violation, unchargeable against a child unless it reaches the misdemeanor amount. So, and it's a good analogy to consider because the simple harassment, typical police behavior, is akin, it's a violation, so we can't charge that. We can if they hurt them bad enough, which is scary, but... There would be penalties if it reached the misdemeanor level for us to do that.
How does it reach the misdemeanor level?
That's perfect. For above, for 15 and under, right? Yeah, 15, 14.
So that's, go ahead. Might also be able to send to them a pin. There are other
levels. When do you, in other words, when they're 15 years old, let's face reality, they're still really right until they're probably 20, they're still thinking very much like a child as opposed to an adult. Their mindset is different. They have a much more following aspect. In other words, people may not understand that, but they will follow the other peers much more than, you know, I mean, if I see something going on wrong in my age, I will say something or do something. I'm not going to go along with it, where somebody of that nature will, and that's what makes it so intensely rough, the type of bullying. What it does to children. I mean, because the other kids are all doing that, and it becomes like a really, and I believe me, I've seen it, it's, you know,
you were an educator.
Yeah, right.
So,
I taught high school for 28 years. So.
Can I just add one thing, too? Which is that the you know, the old-fashioned typical bully, Dr. Byer was saying, stick in the locker, take your lunch money. There was sort of a time and place where that was going to occur. With these things,
it's
like a smart bomb. It just it can go anywhere at any time. There's no safe place.
Right.
No, I get the degree.
There is no safe place. That's the key. There absolutely is no safe place. You're not even safe in your own home. You know, now, so I understand all that, and you know, I understand how devastating that is, and I've seen it firsthand. And, you know, work with people to get past it. So I certainly understand that. My problem is, in a sense, when we're doing these things, and we all grew up and do these things, and it's sort of the criminal justice system in general. You know, we have, I mean, most per capita people locked up in jail of any place in the world. So when you think about that, it's the mindset, again, is in this case, you're sure there are some aspects of it that you're not, it's not punishment, but much of it is. And, you know, when you create a record, when a kid has a record, even at the 16, 17, he ends up getting a record out of being a bully, and that goes with him forever. And, you know, and let's face some people, and we don't know exactly why they may do something. And, you know, some cases, you know, the person that's getting bullied may turn around and begin to bully back on using the internet because maybe they're bullied, they're the ones that get shoved in the locker. So they start using the internet to bully back, and now all of a sudden they get arrested and they get the record. I mean, my concern is, I'd rather see even the over 16, 17, 18, even, you know, going into around 19 years old, I mean, to the point where they could be more of an intervention. In other words, instead of automatically a crime, a record, know, that, because all, once you have the record, you were, as you know, that all of a sudden cuts down your options on what you're going to be in the future, in a sense. You know, it keeps cutting back options anytime you, you know, end up in the back of that paddy wagon for one reason or the other. Your options cut short.
Sure, I think I can address those concerns somewhat. So this law, as it exists, makes the charges the 16-year-old or 17-year-old as a misdemeanor. As a matter of law in New York State, a person under 18 who's charged with a misdemeanor has something that's called youthful offender status. And for a first offense, it's actually mandatory youthful offender status. It's not discretionary. It's not up to a judge to decide. First offense, mandatory YO, which is a sealed record. So as far as records go, if my son or daughter committed this offense and they're 16 or 17 when they committed and they're charged and they've never been in trouble before, there isn't going to be a record from this.
But if they did, if they stole a candy bar, that's possible or whatever.
If they stole a candy bar over 16
right.
and committed a petty larceny and were convicted of petty larceny, right. We are going down a slippery slope of what if.
No, I understand that. I have a real concern with the criminal justice system in general because of the way it's a lock you up mentality, and that's my concern is running in that end is that lock you up mentality that. You know, ends up, what happens is we end up 18, 19-year-old kids, once they get in the system, they have a problem, the next thing you know, the recidivism rate is absurd.
Well, I can tell you with children, the kids we deal with in family court, the last thing we want to do is put a child out of the home for a million reasons, but one of which will be near and dear to you, is it costs the county money.
I don't question your morals.
Yeah.
I understand that. I don't question yours, but I could question somebody else's. I understand where I'm coming from. I know that, what I know of you, I don't think that would make your mind stop.
Well, it's certainly not our agenda. I don't think that it's Mr. Arnright's agenda.
No, typically it is not. I know Ollie personally, and a great deal of respect for him.
I work for Mr. Cartwright.
And so I know that. But there are other people that could be elected as a TA that would not be Ollie Cartwright.
That's correct.
You know what I mean? I mean, I've seen people that were running and could have won that,
But again, this law?
We have a long record of lock them up TAs.
But again, this law is set up that the person who commits it a first time is supposed to go on probation. If they're found to have done it. And certainly they're entitled to
a
complete
19,
legal proceeding.
19?
16 and up.
So if they're 19, they go on probation, but they still have a record.
19-year-old would have a record if they were convicted of a misdemeanor.
Right.
They're no longer a YO.
I mean, isn't there...
But the judge has... If I could just ask...
I know that the judge has discretion.
For an ACD, I mean...
So absolutely. Absolutely.
My concern, again, is I'd rather see education more, somebody re-educated dealing with this. Because, sometimes, there's somebody that's 18, 19 years old, they may get busted down this. Instead of having a record, they actually went to a re-education program. And sometimes people don't quite understand, these kids don't quite understand how it really affected the other person.
And how devastating it can be for the
Where do these bullies come from? I think that was sort of one of the questions we had.
Right.
But where do these bullies come from? Oftentimes, probably most oftentimes, it is learned behavior in the home, right? So how are we, short of implementing some piece of legislation that compels it to happen, how are we going to get that education to these kids? That these parents that are teaching their kids this in their home, not knowingly, just how they live their life.
The educational program could end up being a condition of the probation, which is the important part about making the probation.
Correct.
It could be. I understand what these could be, but the thing is, it's not in here. That would be, in other words, the first thing they do, anybody 19 or under, an education program. That is a more effective way of them not doing it again.
me sometimes he end up getting busted and they're just mad.
I mean,
you might get it, they're mad and they're all
well, let us say this. The 19-year-old who does this would go on probation. If they successfully completed the probation, they would come out of this without spending any time in jail. Certainly, as Mr. Ron points out, the court has the opportunity to issue an adjournment contemplation dismissal at that point in time. And you have to remember, too, any misdemeanor sentence would more than likely be accompanied by a pre-sentence investigation on the adults, which will come through the probation department. And I would think that if the offender had complied with everything, that the recommendation probably would be for an ACP.
Ken?
Thanks. You know, one thing, you know, and we've spent quite a bit of time talking about this between, you know, the three of us. Mary, you were there. Legislator Delfilio was there. And I think that Legislator DeLon was invited but was unable to attend that day. You know, they were the sponsors of the law originally. You know, I really felt like I benefited and I understood more about the need for something like this when you talked about, you know, some real-life examples, real-worldly examples that you're dealing with of either a chargeable offense or an unchargeable offense because there's no law in place that handles minors. If you could just share one or two of those with us.
Yeah, we've had some right here in Ulster County that, because you hear about the big cases, right? I don't know if you've heard of Amanda Todd, who committed suicide, another girl, Megan Meyer, who committed suicide after her enemy's mother basically catfished her on MySpace. But those are like, oh, that doesn't happen here, right? But it does. I mean, I'm sure you all know that.
What is that? Catfish.
Oh, really? When you pretend...
I'm an old guy.
I didn't even know what it was.
Never met a child.
I still...
Notre Dame linebacker.
I don't want to
know. Never met a child. Notre Dame linebacker who thought he had a girlfriend and turned out to be...
Sure.
It's just
a boy. Oh. That's catfishing. You go on and you make believe you're something
you
else.
You make believe you're somebody else and create a profile and then lure someone in. And
oh, yes.
Megan Meyer, I think, is the most famous case of the catfishing by someone.
Okay. So here in Ulster that we've had, I just want to tell you about a couple of quick cases that we had that really hit us because one was a girl who, we're just going to call her Jessica, who her iPhone broke, and she asked her friend John to borrow his iPhone, and he cleared his phone and gave it to her to borrow. She borrowed it for, I think it was about 6 months, and she changed all the passwords and made it her own phone, and then I think it was about 6 months later, John's phone broke. So he said to Jessica, may I have my phone back? So she deleted it. She actually set it back to factory settings, which I don't know if everyone knows what that is. Basically, hear the whole thing, like it, no one ever owned it. Yeah, she wiped it clean and sent and gave it back to John. John was very savvy, and he plugged it into his home computer, and was able to find everything she had on there, which included pictures that she sent to her boyfriend at the time, and she was 14, I think, and he was 15, And it also included a video of her. There are no children here anymore, right?
No, we cleared the
room. Yeah.
Okay. A video of her masturbating. She sent to her boyfriend. So John just sort of kept this to himself until he heard that Jessica had said something about him that he didn't appreciate. So he took these pictures, these texts, this video, and sent it via email, via text to a bunch of kids at school. A lot of the kids at school got the messages on their phone at school, got the emails, and they brought it to the school's attention. So the administrators did a whole investigation, and it came to us only because of the video. This is the important part. Had the video not been there, had it been only the pictures of her breasts and buttocks that she had sent, there would have been nothing anyone could do as far as getting him. The school probably could get him some help, but here's the thing. He ends up getting placed on probation, and he had to go get help, get training, get education to understand that, you know, he crossed the line. You can't do that to someone. She was devastated. Then her mothers saw the video when they had to come in and meet with us. You all watched the video. I wasn't there that day. So, she ended up having, she was missing school, she had to go to the counseling because she was completely her world was destroyed. I don't know if you want to hear any more real world examples. I have one from last week, actually.
I was in court last week, and there was a young woman, a young girl there on a PINS, I want to say it was about 65 days of school missed, and it came out that she stopped attending because in the locker room some kid had taken a picture of her undressed and had sent it around the school. And not to feel sorry for myself, but it's kind of a terrible position to be in as the presenter or prosecutor of the case, because I have tremendous empathy for this poor girl. At the same time, I know she needs an education, and I can't allow her to not go to school. So this is why we're, one of the reasons we're reaching out to you. We want a piece of law. We want something to help us
help
the victims and really help the perpetrators. We do want to educate them, Mr. Donaldson. We really do.
Jeff?
Yeah, I have a question. When this all started, I was approached by the ACLU because they were very concerned about this. And I'm wondering at this point, have they vetted this? Have they looked at this at all?
No. They have not vetted it. We have not asked for their approval of it. And I do think it's an important thing to remember. The ACLU does a wonderful job. They do some great things. They also have represented the American Nazi Party. They have represented the Ku Klux Klan. They've taken some fairly extreme positions, and I don't really feel that we need to be beholden to the ACLU for an approval of this.
We did take into account several, and Erica and Nick also helped with this and found a couple further cases for us to really narrow the language so that it would fit the recommendations given by the U.S. Supreme Court and the New York State Court of Appeals for language that would meet the standards and pass the standards. We worked really hard on getting this right. Yeah.
Now, I'm in support of it.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, what's the next step for them?
Mm-hmm. They're probably not going to
They're going to do what's...
If I could just jump in, you know, because I've talked extensively with legislative counsel on this, because she worked really hard, you know, in looking, you know, with the county attorney, you know, collaborating with the county attorney's office, looking. There was an Albany County law that was challenged in the New York State Court of Appeals. It was the Marquand decision. Am I correct on that? In the Marquand decision, the Court of Appeals said, this doesn't meet the standard for free speech. This violates free speech. But here's what it would have to look like if it wasn't going to violate free speech. Mm-hmm. And then they, in their decision, pretty much showed exactly how to craft the local law in order to make it so it doesn't it meets the standard. And I know that all the attorneys working on it had worked very hard to write it as the New York State Court of Appeals say that they want it.
Great.
Has there been some similar legislation passed elsewhere?
We would be the sixth county in New York State to have such a law if this legislature passes it. The interesting thing is would be the first sort of rural small population county. The rest are more large population centers. Oneida, Erie, Suffolk, and at least Rochester is
Monroe.
County
the same as this?
Fairly close to it.
And have they been implemented already?
They have been. Some of them have been implemented for quite some time. I have them all downstairs. One of them was I don't like to say things unless I know it for sure, but I believe it was 2008. A couple of them have been in for.
So there would be a pretty strong record as to whether it's been successful.
Yes.
I can get you copies of them. I have them downstairs.
Right.
I'll let Dave go if he's got questions. I've just got specific, you know, like my own personal view when we get beyond the nuts and the bolts of what's inside it. So, Dave, if you have more questions, I want to let you go first.
And we did go around and speak to some organizations. We spoke to the Mental Health Association of Ulster County. I think that was very favorable. We spoke to the LGBT community, and I think that they're on board with our efforts. He spoke to Human Rights Commission. So,
and you, Phil.
Why don't the Human Rights Commission have some questions?
The human rights questions were primarily about whether this would, I think it would be fair to say, if this would be racially implemented. Certainly, I don't think that that would ever be mentioned.
Right.
I don't know. I was there. It was mostly Reverend Childs, and it was about race.
Yeah. The issue was that early on when we first talked about doing this, we had used the Albany County draft as a baseline, and the way that's written, the way that the penalties were written, it's up to 90 days in jail. Just a general, statute, and it caused this, oh my goodness, you're going to be locking your children up. So when we spent a lot of time working on this, working with the VA, you'll see we crafted it in such a way that it makes it very clear that diversion is, with the 180 program, is the result of most of these children will end up. So it took us, that was most of me explaining, how the penalties would work. And we heard them, we took a lot of their input, and we were sensitive in a lot of the language to emphasize the diversion.
Right, and this is a much less punitive statute than the Albany County statute.
Particularly, you're talking about an older woman doing something like that to a kid, it's totally unacceptable. Not that this is acceptable, because it's not unacceptable even when young kids do it. They need to be taught not to do that. And, sometimes they can come from a good home. It depends on what set them off many times. You don't know. Make the comment that they're coming from bad homes, or, they're taught that at home. Because sometimes people are not taught that at home, but somehow they pick that up. They make that up to peers, or they get whatever reason it may be. My concern, of course, is that you were talking about, the 180 program. There's a program that, a few years ago, I insisted that we fund that program because of the community. That type of thing is what really makes a difference in people's lives, in these kids' lives. When they make a mistake, and they really understand the consequences of that. Now, some people, maybe they don't have that mind to understand the consequences, no matter what you do. And then most do.
As a parent of children, most of us have children in the room, and my kids went through a terrible time. A lot of times when I see things cross my desk, I think about how it relates to me in my situation. I remember where I lived in New Paltz, and it was New Paltz Confidential, where they rape girls and they brutalize each other. And we had an incident, and we went to the school first, and there's nothing they could do. They went through the DASA process, and nothing they could do because it didn't happen. It wasn't affecting her schooling. And we went to the police, nothing we can do. And this is meant to fill that gap. Be a way that you can deal with some serious violations and nip it in the bud and create that deterrent. And some of the, we're working with a lot of the superintendents talking about this, and they kind of see the education around the availability of this law create some of that deterrent, and it gives them something to point to. There's something that can be done now. So there's many layers of benefit that go along with having a statute like this.
Dr. Meyer, you've taken time to spend with us, so I was interested in what you had to say.
Well, to pick up on something Mr. Donaldson just said a second ago, what the schools see is really two, and this is going to simplify it, but they see two groups of kids who do this behavior. There are kids that, for you and I, might fall into what we might really see as a bully-type kid, but this starts so early. Starts in fifth grade when we start handing our kids tech. Middle school, it explodes. And it is pretty hot and heavy in ninth and tenth grade. And then it distills down to, a couple of
what's a bad term, bad apples. They're just kids who, this is how they are. They more often than not tend to come from a larger picture in which they've got lots of terrible models to work with. But schools will hear really bad stuff on these things. And it's not a kid who's really a bully, but it's a kid who gets caught up. Any kind of intervention that's done up to a point brings that kid back. We do get our hands around them. We do guide them. They do get to hear it. When I first was shown this, I may have my own notions, very much like maybe everyone here does. How far do I want to go with a kid and what kind of punishment, whatever, do I need to put in place? There's a couple of parts. One is what schools have under DASA, which, you know, has us address it both. When it first came out, it was stuff that happened at school, and then it got expanded to stuff that happened anywhere.
Can you explain DASA for those who don't know? Because I don't think everyone at the table might know.
DASA is...
Dignity of All Students Act.
Yes.
I know you know it, but I was
just... and it's something that was passed by the legislature. At the same time, they were actually looking at anti-bullying ones at the same time. We expected at the school level to hear, after they passed DASA back in 13, and the schools were directed, put a coordinator in each building, it was a person that the kids could get to when they had concerns. And every building in Ulster County has a DASA coordinator in the building all the time. That was originally done, and now because it's getting so stretched, it's sometimes a person who's there half the time and whatever. That's part of what, as this thing goes out, it exhausts personnel, if you will. So their coordinators staff that are there to handle kids and address kids and have a place for kids to go. In 13, you had to have that. Kids filled out reports, so they file like an incident report, like you fell down the stairs or anything else. That's a formal complaint. It goes to the DASA coordinator first. They sit with the kid, do as much of an investigation as they need to get a feel for what's going on. First year go-round, it was only things that happened in the building itself. Second year, it became stuff in and out of the building. Well, it becomes harder for us to do much about what's outside the building, although in it comes. I mean, people who've been in schools or work in any organization know that we wish we could only deal with the stuff that happened 9 to 5. But we're going to get the stuff that happened all the other times because it's walking the door at 9 o'clock in the morning. So it expanded out into a realm that the schools don't necessarily have a good way of putting a hand out into past a certain point. The extra piece, though, that comes up with this kind of problem is that there are adults who play in. So it isn't just kids. And that obviously compounds the error even more. DASA doesn't have a way of touching the adult in any consistent way. We can bring them in and talk to them, but they don't have to be part of the investigation. They can stand off. And many times in schools, you're going to get that to happen just because that's where they are. We see in the school, were this to be in place as an extra tool and an additional tool. Because there are kids who you talk to them, you counsel them, you bring them in, you give them a consistent, you're going to come back on Tuesdays, and it goes on for a good period of time, but you know the kid is resistant enough. It's not enough. They might need to have the ante needs to be up. I mean, and not just disciplinary stuff like I'll suspend you one more day because the victims are skipping school, the bullies were kicking out of school, trying to get them back, but I can't let you stay in because you're wrecking havoc. It would give us something else that at some point along the line we would say, yes, it's worth adding that, trying that. And I do see for 50 reports last year went through one of the high schools. Of those, there were probably 2 or 3 legit bullies in the mix, and the rest were kids who just got caught up in stuff. But some are kids who just repeat and get caught up in it. Something that looked like they needed to take it more seriously clinically would have been useful to them. At least that's a belief. and that's why it would be easy for me to see this as positive as an opposite.
There are two things about DASA that I think it's important to keep in mind, too, because DASA, Dignity for All Students Act, is a school enterprise, so to speak. We have time out of school in the summer where the DASA isn't available, but we also have the other situation, which lends itself to the internet and the computer and the devices, is you have a fair amount of this that transcends the district. You can have a kid from Kingston who's doing this to a kid from Onteora, or, and, you know, for DASA to fit into that. I think when we think about bullies, our first thought is always the traditional physical bully. But this is a different type of bully. This is emotional bullying, which, although it may not leave a mark on your arm, it certainly leaves marks on your psyche.
I think everybody agrees that the mind side is important, but in most cases, most is the concern, but I mean, you wake up, this is everywhere, but I want to say one of the issues, the education component, one of the more extremely important things, you know, the problem in today's world, you know, you can't get away with jack. I mean, you know, as some people might say, I mean, there's cameras on there, there's everything, no matter what happens. I mean, I don't know where I would be in today's world. I mean, when I was a kid, I was a bit of a jackass from time to time. And, you know what, if it wasn't for a cop grabbing me by the back of the neck and kicking me in the ass and bringing me home, I don't know where I would be today. But that's not part of society today, you know. So that's what my concern is. It's so quick. It's so quick that somebody all of a sudden has a record or, you know, something that they have lived with for the rest of their life on their, you know, on their background papers. And that's what concerns me. Is, you know, for me, I'm fortunate. My youngest is 26. I think he's 26 today. So, in other words, he's past all this age, and, you know, out of all my kids, he was the worst kid when it came to this type of stuff, but, I mean, you know, a little problematic from here to there, you know. I was always worried about that idea of a record. I didn't worry about the other, you know, my daughter, Deirdre, whatsoever.
Hey, Jen. Ken.
But, you know, that's what worries me, is the idea that, you know, I don't want to have somebody's, you know, set up their life for something stupid that they did.
We do think that this is a law that's designed to educate. We love, you mentioned before, 180. We love 180.
Mm-hmm.
We send kids to 180 all the time. We're great fans of 180. And the children, the juveniles that would fall under the statute would be in diversion, and the diversion program is designed to educate and inform.
Now, what is it unclassified? Yeah, I haven't had too much on some of these. Unclassified misdemeanors. I mean, there's just a clash in one class.
A class A misdemeanor is punishable by up to 1 year in jail and 3 years probation supervision. A class B misdemeanor is punishable by up to 6 months in jail and 1 year probation. An unclassified misdemeanor under Article 65 of the Penal Law, I believe it's 65, isn't it? Under 65 of the Penal Law is punishable by a term of probation. So it doesn't have jail attached to it. That's the significance of it.
And but there is a record.
If it's not your first misdemeanor, we talked before about youthful offender status, so if it's not your first, there's the potential for a record.
And that would be up to a judge's discretion whether or not he would want to, you know, include, you know, an ACD and some sort of an educational program.
ACD.
the German continuation of business.
Is that when they're saying somebody over 16?
If you don't screw up in 6 months,
is that
there's no
record. Somebody that's 58?
Oh, yes. Yes.
All right, so in other words, I have less concern with somebody that's 58.
Right.
But that page, you know, what I'm just saying is they...
They should know better.
You know, they should definitely know better. But, you know, when you're 19 or 20, you're still doing stupid things.
We understand and hear your concerns, and we feel like we addressed it as we went as far as we could to address that specific concern. But, you know, once you're 19, then you have to, the New York State legislature would have to change, you know.
Well, you wouldn't have to put it in the law here. You know, you would deal with it differently. Yeah. You turned around and said, you know, any person between the ages of 16 and 19.
But that's under the current state statute.
Yeah. 16 to 19 is
the
current state statute, right?
To get youthful offender, or just
18? Under, yeah, he's saying under 18, 18 or above.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that means the kid that's 18 and a month old, you know, gets the record and, you know, turns into another thing when the
senior.
Right, a senior in high school, basically. Right, well, seniors in high school are 18 by the time graduate.
I think that what they're saying is that we can't extend youthful offender status beyond 18 without the state legislature.
Yeah,
and we're also listening to Dr. Beyer, who's telling us, and he's told us this repeatedly, I actually think he said it tonight, that when you get past, how old would you say it is, Bob?
When you're in the 16 and up range, you've really narrowed the behavior, and you've also narrowed the number of people that are involved.
Right.
And you need a tool to deal with the extreme cases.
Yeah.
And your hands are tied when we reach an extreme case.
Right.
And granted, I understand where your approach is coming from. A lot of our approach and thought process is from dealing with victims and the parents of victims. And I'll tell you, when they show up on your door and you can't help them, it certainly doesn't make you feel very good about yourself.
Well, I mean, is there a way that we can put in here that, you know, if they're only 16, or, I mean, I'm looking at 16 to 20 or something like that, and put in there that, you know, the first one is an unclassified misdemeanor. But can it be to the point where it's, in other words, the record is erased after going through an educational program?
Erased, so, like, expunged?
Whatever.
Well,
I don't know the legal
number. If it's our useful funder, it's sealed, but they're not. I'll be honest with you. I don't know the answer to that.
I can give you some speculation on practically speaking. So I think that let's run a hypothetical. You have a 18-year-old who does this, and that same 18-year-old has a prior record because he stole a candy bar from Walgreens.
Right.
And this 18-year-old is in court in front of Judge Kirshner down at City Court.
18, you can still do public opinion. You can still do a youthful offender?
No. 19. No. His YO goes up to 18.
16, 17.
Right.
His
right.
YO. But okay. So we have an 18-year-old. The 18-year-old has a prior. He's in front of Judge Kirshner in City Court. What are that judge's options? We have to have a certain amount of confidence in the people we elect judge to make the right decisions. I would think, and again, now we have to take Holly and Mr. Cornwright into consideration and how he wants these things handled. I know that when I was an assistant for Holly, that his sort of guiding point on something like that would be interim probation would be the right answer. And under interim probation, what you'd probably do is you'd plead the 18-year-old to the misdemeanor charge. You put him on probation for a year, and if he successfully completed the probation, at the end of the year, he could come in and vacate that charge. That would be a practical outcome to it, and I think having...
Well, see, the thing is what I would like, you know, I understand where you're coming from, and I have a lot, like I told you before, I have a great deal of respect for Holly. I voted for him.
Okay. I won't tell John.
Don't write that down. anyway, the point is that, you know, because I do have a great deal of respect for him, and Bill Kirshner, I've known him since he first started getting involved in the Corporation Council of the City of Kingston. I was an alderman there. So I've known him quite a while, and I know and respect that. You know, but those people, you know, you deal with not the people that are in there now. You have to deal with who could be there. And, you know, we have, this, tough mentality sometimes. And, so what I'm saying is, what you're talking about, I'd like to see that in the law, that it would, in other words, put it in there that this is the first choice to do. In other words, for this first case, regardless of, I mean, if they stole a candy bar or did something stupid, was picked up on, smoking a joint in them someplace or whatever, whatever they did, and then they come up to do this, it may not be something that, they're just, let's face it, people do wrong things. In other words, they may have done something wrong, and then all of a sudden this turns it into something else. Believe me, it's easy for kids to get involved in this. It's very easy for some. I've seen people harass people on Facebook that are adults on a regular basis. And you can say things, you can write things. Believe me, I've been dealt with them, with people, ropey things. It doesn't, my skin is so thick you can't get a nail through it. But the point is that other people are very much affected by this.
Our victims under this law, the people we're defining as the victim, these are the kids whose hormones, the victims are at the running wild, for they're at the most sensitive point in their life.
Right, but some of these kids that do this have been victims themselves, and that's one of the reasons they kind of sometimes do this kind of stuff.
I think I see what you're asking, and I would have to look into it. We would have to talk to the sponsor, obviously, and...
My goal here, and again, the reason that...
But I'm not sure that it is doable, to be perfectly honest.
I've seen it firsthand, and I'm not talking about your extreme cases, but it was pretty extreme for the people that I've seen, what they had to go through, these kids that I dealt with, and, where they wouldn't come to school. I ended up going to, a kid's house, because of what she went through. Mm. I went on my own time, went there and brought her stuff and did things that had to use. It's devastating.
Yeah.
This is a law that doesn't have tiger teeth. Quite frankly, it's a law that doesn't have puppy teeth. I don't think you're going to find a more passive, perpetrator-centric piece of legislation than this.
Kat?
Mayor, thanks. I just, one thing to keep in mind too, David, one thing I wanted to bring up also is, especially with the ones that are going to be dealt with in family court, when these things are dealt with in family court, it's done in the best interest of the child, and that's both the victim and the perpetrator, because at that point they're both children. When these ones go to family court.
No,
so, absolutely.
They're pretty much covered on 16. I'm not worried about that. They're the ones that automatically get the record, and that's what I'm concerned.
But not automatically. you would have to have squandered your YO. You would have to have squandered the YO to get that record.
Second hand.
But just to comment on the local law and why it's so important to me is because I was I was a victim of bullying. Terrible in school, so much so that my grades suffered. I was a low C student. I dreaded going to school, and home was a safe place, but I'd have to run through the woods in a path that I created to get there from elementary school. And it got worse in middle school. My parents finally, and I'm really blessed that they had the means to do this, but took me out of public school and put me in parochial school. Where they had the resources to deal and the ability to, if you screw up in a private school, they can just kick you out. They can't do that in public school. It's just not an option. And my grades, increased from a low C to a high B in high school. It happened within 6 months of being there. And I just can't, as I sit around and I watch, I get cyberbullied on a daily basis now in the Freeman Online comments, as does Lester Thompson and many of us. But
my mind is fully developed now to where I can handle it.
Yeah.
You know,
so
most of the time, but
regular bullied or cyberbullied?
Regular bullied. And what I was commenting, my comments were going to go further and say, I don't know where I would be today if the internet were as much of a tool as it is today. Because when I was in elementary and middle school, we didn't have the internet, really. I guess my generation is the last one that can say that. The internet wasn't really, cell phones, weren't even really in everybody's pocket the way they are today until I was in the middle of my high school.
Well, I grew up with a party line.
but I just, when I got bullied, and I got bullied really, really badly, but when I got bullied, you had to bully me to my face. You had to bully me in front of me or write something on the bathroom wall. Today kids can be bullied from 1,000 miles away.
There's no safe place.
And you never have to look the person in the face. And that's always been something to me that, when you look somebody in the face and bully them, there is, you need to have the intent to hurt them. When you bully somebody from 1,000 miles away, you don't have to look them in the face. You don't see their reaction. You don't see the hurt in their face. You don't see, I don't remember growing up as many kids killing themselves from bullying as do from cyberbullying, because it's an ease of access, it's ease of opportunity, and it's the fact that you don't have to look them in the face.
It's disassociated.
I
had that metaphor, which was the smart bomb metaphor, and I think it's so much easier to push a button and kill somebody than it is to stand there and do it without a button.
So, it's important to me because, again, I don't think that I'd be a county legislator if the internet were a tool of hate back then when I was a kid as it is now. And I don't know, if we can pass this law and it saves one children or five or ten, it's important to me because I feel it. I know what they feel like. I remember coming home from school and telling my mother I didn't want to go back.
I think the alternative to passing this law would be to pass a law that says that you're not allowed to give your child a phone.
Well, as a matter of fact, I wanted to mention that. Yeah. When I got the handbook of the Daily, I was amazed that they don't allow electronic devices at school at all.
That's what you think?
But that's what they say, and that's what you think. But I'm telling you that those devices are in that school.
You have districts in the county who want these things in a classroom because it's an easier way to access the tech that everybody knows that they're already incorporating into the lessons.
Well, I was amazed.
So, I would like to know what we can do about that part of it, because I'm never going to give myself a cell phone. Sorry.
I thought what
I'm
you thought.
I'm not going to give them one. No,
but it comes down to parents.
We are kind of Luddites on my stuff. We're kind of Luddites when it comes to these things. I mean, I do not want them having it. Going to be no, more or less 16, I think.
I was amazed to find out that, and that is the rule, but I was amazed to find out that that is not an enforced
rule.
So
I would like to see it enforced. And I would like to see a way that it's linked to this, and that was where
you
I was going.
Down every time I walked the door?
Yeah. Well, that's
that was partly where I was going with this. It's part of the school board policy. It's in the handbook. I don't want those things in school. I think they are weapons, and I also think that there's a certain, competitiveness about children who do bring them, who get to have them.
Can I bring up one point just to that, though, to your point about them being in school? DASA already handles what happens in school, so it's not even having the devices in school that's as much of a problem that's dealt with by this. This is more once they leave school grounds, if they're cyberbullying, there's nothing we can do.
And only 14 states that just can't address what happens off campus in Washington, D.C. But I am interested in this problem of the schools not encouraging the culture, and if in fact they violate their own rules about electronics, I'd like to see in some way. Maybe not here, but I'd like to see some comment on how that's addressed. I'm not comfortable with the fact that they enforce civil rules.
Well, the problem is you're dealing with so many rules you're dealing with. I mean, in a school way, it's, you know, they tell you you can't have your hat on. I mean, it becomes a situation where somebody's got a phone with them and it's in their pocketbook or whatever, what do you do? You know, when, as a teacher or as a administrator, well, you have to pick your battles. You have a, you're there to give them an education, as Popeye would say. And, you know, there's only so much you can do to get that education across. And if you're picking up, if you're battling with somebody over their hat or over their phone or their over their look, what are you going to get into them? And so sometimes you just have to pick up.
But face it, if the parents were not paying for it, they wouldn't have it.
We can't turn people into
teachers. So
we can't parent for the responsibility.
The parent is choosing that.
Teachers, you know,
right. And that's what the problem is. Yeah. In other words, and you know, hey,
the rare wrong Donaldson agreement.
In other words, I'm not, and believe me, I never really had disciplinary problems in my classroom, very, very seldom. I mean, but,
it says right here that they're
very rough, but I would also not pick a battle with somebody that's not worth taking a battle with. What do I, you know, the kid's got a phone, they
because
catch
it can become pervasive.
I understand that.
Give me an example. Cigarette smoking on county property is prohibited right now, but the security guard is not handing out tickets in the parking lot, if you will. Sometimes prohibitions are designed, and I don't necessarily buy into this, but sometimes prohibitions are designed as behavior changers instead of.
It's not as insidious because it's not like they're all sitting around,
What one of the types of
here.
Right. I mean, what do you do if a kid's got a phone? One of the types of kids got a phone and you're in the classroom, and you know, to me, as long as they're not using the phone in my classroom, I'm not going to get deal with it. If they are using it and I catch them, then I would get kind of belligerent, shall we say.
You don't need
one of the
to.
Types
you
of cases that were
written right in here. That's
not the way it works.
The stolen cell phones. Which, how I know that this comes from the school, is we get the stolen cell phone cases periodically, which creates a certain mixed feeling within me, because I guess, you know, we're glad to see the phone go, right? But at the same time, you know, we have parents coming and saying, you know, I had my child save to buy this phone. And typically, we'll actually try to put those kids through 180. And if they're willing to admit to stealing the phone and make restitution for stealing the phone, then there you go. No court, no
the
problem.
The problem is with the phone, you got parents that want the kids to have phones.
Yeah,
they do.
After what has happened in the schools with the violence, they want to have access to their kids in case there's an emergency situation.
Can I just tell you, we had a case I prosecuted within the past 3 months where a boy at Onteora High School had a knife that was, I think, about 6 inches long and threatened to stab. This is on school property, a young woman in the school. She retreated into the school, and they were able to make a phone call, and the parents in that case were quite pleased to have had the cell phone. I understand why some parents want it, and if it was used always responsibly, we wouldn't have any question. The problem is we're taking something. I used this example when I spoke to the different groups. When you and I were, Mr. Donaldson, when you and I were kids, I had a party line too. A camera, we wanted an instant picture, it was a Polaroid. There were no computers when we were kids. Maybe when Mr. Ronk was a kid, he had a Commodore 64 or something.
He's older than I am. Excellent. I had a regular Nintendo. That's what I started with. That was just after Atari.
But look what we have here. I mean, this is crazy power.
See, in person, believe
me. And we're putting this crazy power in the hands of people who you've already told us, and you're right, do not have a fully developed frontal lobe. We're expecting them to act responsibly.
In any event, I guess I'm just looking for, some connection with the school and school policy. That's all I'm asking.
I know that the superintendent. Association has been reached out to on numerous occasions. So,
overall, and schools, but overall, I think the schools do a decent job.
The schools do a great job.
It's a very
I think this would probably be a good time to vote on the public
schools
hearing.
Schools do a great job. Schools do a great job, and the majority of the vast majority of the cyberbullying that's taken place is taking place out of school hours. It's not
right,
in class where they're committing a misdemeanor.
No,
that's not it.
It's not necessarily generated.
Right. It's not. It's generated from home, computers and cell phones and whatnot.
Mary, we had a motion in a second.
Yeah.
No. So we need a motion?
I'll move it. Oh, you please. Legislator Berkey.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Okay.
Legislator
Dillon. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any against? No? Okay. Thank you.
We can do this all again.
I didn't think I was going to remember.
Okay,
you're not. We're not.
What a proud mom.
Thank you for listening to us.
Thank
we appreciate it.
No, I didn't say that.
Thank you.
Okay, resolution. Oh, I'm sorry. There's another one. We have another one.
I mean, some probably do more than others. You know, it's all about resources. When I got bullied, it was still in the boys will be boys.
Okay, resolution.
You know, so when I get my ass kicked on the playground.
Authorizing chairman of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a grant application requiring assurances for Medicare improvements for patients and providers Act within the New York State Office for the Aging. Any discussion? No discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any against? Okay. Any old business? No? Do you have a motion to adjourn?
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
I would tend to.
All right.
I'm sorry.